This is Audible.
Silverton Audio presents the unabridged recording of Obsidian Sun, a Nate Temple supernatural thriller, The Temple Chronicles, Volume 1. Written by Shane Silvers. Performed by Marcio Catalano. Chapter 1. There was no room for emotion in a hate crime. I had to be cold, heartless. This was just another victim. Nothing more. No face, no name. Frosted blades of grass crunched under my feet, sounding to my ears alone like the symbolic glass that one shattered under a napkin at a Jewish wedding. The noise would have threatened to give away my stealthy advance as I stalked through the moonlit field, but I was no novice and had planned accordingly. Being a wizard, I was able to muffle all sensory evidence with a fine cloud of magic. No sounds and no smells. Nifty. But if I made the spell much stronger, the anomaly would be too obvious to my prey. I knew the consequences for my dark deed tonight. If caught, jail time or possibly a gruesome, painful death. But if I succeeded, the look of fear and surprise in my victim's eyes before his world collapsed around him was well worth the risk. I simply couldn't help myself. I had to take him down. I knew the cops had been keeping tabs on my car, but I was confident that they hadn't followed me. I hadn't seen a tail on my way here, but seeing as how they frowned on this kind of thing, I had taken a circuitous route just in case. I was safe, I hoped. Then my phone chirped at me as I received a text. My body's fight-or-flight syndrome instantly kicked in, my heart threatening to explode in one final act of pulmonary paroxysm. I hissed instinctively, practically jumping out of my skin. I had forgotten to silence it. Stupid, stupid, stupid. My body remained tense as I swept my gaze over the field, sure that I had been made. My breathing finally began to slow, my pulse returning to normal as I saw no change in my surroundings. Hopefully my magic had silenced the sound and my resulting outburst. I finally glanced down at the phone and read the text. I typed back a quick and angry response before I switched the phone to vibrate. I continued on, the lining of my coat constricting my breathing, or maybe it was because I was leaning forward in anticipation. Breathe, I chided myself. He doesn't know you're here. All this risk for a book. It better be worth it. I'm taller than most, and not abnormally handsome, but I knew how to play the genetic cards I had been dealt. I had fashionably shaggy blonde hair, and my frame was thick with well-earned muscle, yet still lean. I had once been told that my eyes were like twin emeralds pitted against the golden tufts of my hair. A face, like a jewelry box. Of course, that was after I had filled the woman with copious amounts of wine. Still, I'd like to imagine that was how everyone saw me. But tonight, all that was masked by magic. I grinned broadly as the outline of the hairy Hulk finally came into view. He was blessedly alone. No nearby sentries to give me away. That was always a risk when performing this ancient rite of passage. I tried to keep the grin on my face from dissolving into a maniacal cackle. My skin danced with energy, both natural and unnatural, as I manipulated the threads of magic floating all around me. My victim stood just ahead, oblivious of the world of hurt that I was about to unleash. Even with his millennia of experience, he didn't stand a chance. I had done this so many times that the routine of it was my only enemy. I lost count of how many times I had been told not to do it again. Those who knew declared it cruel, evil, and sadistic. But what fun wasn't? Regardless, it wasn't enough to stop me from doing it again, and again. Call it an addiction, if you will, but it was too much of a rush to ignore. The pungent smell of manure filled the air, latching onto my nostril hairs. I took another step, trying to calm my racing pulse. A glint of gold reflected in the silver moonlight, but the victim remained motionless, hopefully unaware or all was lost. I wouldn't make it out alive if he knew I was here. Timing was everything. I carefully took the last two steps, a lifetime between each, watching the legendary monster's ears anxious and terrified that I would catch even so much as a twitch in my direction. Seeing nothing, a fierce grin split my unshaven cheeks. My spell had worked. I raised my palms an inch away from their target, firmly planted my feet, and squared my shoulders. I took one silent, calming breath, and then heaved forward with every ounce of physical strength I could muster, as well as a teensy-weensy boost of magic, enough to goose him good.
Moo!
The sound tore through the cool October night like an unstoppable freight train. Thud! Splat! The beast collapsed sideways into the frosty grass, straight into a steaming patty of cow shit. Cow dung, or, if you really want to church it up, a meadow muffin. But to me, shit is and always will be shit. Cow tipping. It doesn't get any better than that in Missouri. Especially when you're tipping the Minotaur. Capital M. Razor blade hooves tore at the frozen earth as the beast struggled to stand, grunts of rage vibrating the air. I raised my arms triumphantly.
Booyah!
Temple 1, Minotaur 0, I crowed. Then I very bravely prepared to protect myself. Some people just can't take a joke. Cruel, evil, and sadistic, cow-tipping may be, but by hell it was a rush. The legendary beast turned his gaze on me after gaining his feet, eyes ablaze as he unfolded to his full height on two tree-trunk thick legs, hooves magically transforming into heavily booted feet. The heavy gold ring quivered in his snout as the Minotaur panted, corded muscle contracting over his human-like chest. As I stared up into those eyes, I actually felt sorry for, well, myself.
I have killed greater men than you for less offense.
I swear to God his voice sounded like an angry James Earl Jones.
You have shit on your shoulder, Asterion.
I ignited a rolling ball of fire in my palm in order to see his eyes more clearly. By no means was it a defensive gesture on my part. It was just dark. But under the weight of his glare, even I couldn't buy my reassuring lie. I hoped using a form of his ancient name would give me brownie points, or maybe just not worthy of killing points. The beast grunted, eyes tightening, and I sensed the barest hesitation.
Nate Temple, your name would look splendid on my already long list of slain idiots.
Asterion took a threatening step forward, and I thrust out my palm in warning, my roiling flame blue now.
You lost fair and square, Asterion. Yield or perish.
The beast's shoulders sagged slightly. Then he finally nodded to himself, appraising me with a scrutiny of a worthy adversary.
Your time comes, Temple, but I will grant you this. You've got a pair of stones on you to rival Hercules.
I pointedly risked a glance down at the myth's own crown jewels.
Well, I sure won't need a wheelbarrow anytime soon, but I'm sure I'll manage.
The Minotaur blinked once, and then bellowed out a deep, contagious, snorting laughter. Realizing I wasn't about to become a murder statistic, I couldn't help but join in. It felt good. It had been a while since I had experienced genuine laughter. In the harsh moonlight, his bulk was quite intimidating as he towered head and shoulders above me. This was the beast that had fed upon human sacrifices for countless years while imprisoned in Daedalus's labyrinth in Greece. And all of that protein had not gone to waste, forming a heavily woven musculature over the beast's body that made even Mr. Olympia look puny. From the neck up, he was entirely bull, but the rest of his body more resembled a thickly furred man. But as shown moments ago, he could adapt his form to his environment, never appearing fully human, but able to make his entire form appear as a bull when necessary. For instance, as he had looked just before I tipped him, maybe he had been scouting the field for heifers before I so efficiently killed the mood. His bull face was also covered in thick, coarse hair, even sporting a long, weighty beard of sorts, and his eyes were the deepest brown I'd ever seen.
Cowshit brown. His snout jutted out, emphasizing the gold ring dangling from his glistening nostrils, catching a glint in the luminous glow of the moon.
The metal was at least an inch thick, and etched with runes of a language long forgotten. Thick, aged ivory horns sprouted from each temple, long enough to skewer a wizard with little effort. He was nude,
except for a beaded necklace and a pair of distressed leather boots that were big enough to stomp a size 25 in my face if he felt so inclined. I hoped our blossoming friendship wouldn't end that way. I really did.
Chapter 2. After the laughter died down, the Minotaur spoke, his shoulders relaxing as he assumed a less intimidating posture.
I must thank you for testing me this night. I almost forgot the path, and for this I must ask your forgiveness.
I blinked. Forgiveness?
He nodded, relaxing even more, steepling his fingers before him as if in prayer.
I have been reading quite a bit lately on the Buddhist faith. Most intriguing. I can't fathom why I'd never heard of it until recently. But I need not react to such an overt negative offense. Karma will come back to visit you, quite severely, I would imagine.
He sneered.
It took a few moments for my brain to process his words.
Karma?
You're a Buddhist now? I practically yelled in disbelief.
Come on! It was just a practical joke.
You make it sound as if karma will be gunning for me.
Asterion began to lecture, his snout pulled back like Mr. Ed chewing a wad of peanut butter.
The severity of the karmic retaliation is weighted against 5 conditions. Frequent repetitive action. Determined intentional action. Action performed without regret. Action against extraordinary persons.
He leveled the meaty thumb at his chest with a vain grin.
And finally, action toward those who have helped one in the past.
He wasn't able to conceal his pleasure.
Having broken all 5 this night, I would say karma's going to destroy you.
I rolled my eyes and shrugged. The Minotaur switched gears.
My deepest condolences. But if this is about your parents' murder, I cannot aid you.
Before I could stop myself, the frozen ground around us vaporized to baking clay and cow shit in a 50-foot radius, steam rising into a heavy fog. I could smell the soles of our boots burning like fresh tarmac.
What?
I hissed. The Minotaur's eyes widened.
You are the heir to the notorious temple wizards who recently passed. Why would you seek me out again if not to find their murderer?
The evidence revealed no foul play.
What do you know?
I whispered, voice like gravel, trying to blockade the torrent of emotions that had so suddenly swelled up inside me. The emotions I thought I had successfully walled away, until now.
Nothing. But come now, Temple. You know it to merely be a delusion. Are you claiming that you do not know a way to kill someone without a trace? You are a wizard. But this child's play for your kind. When a wizard dies, it is either violent or from extreme old age. For two to die within moments of one another is beyond calculation. Even Hermes wouldn't bet on that.
I had checked the evidence myself. Repeatedly. He was wrong. He had to be wrong. Calming myself, I came back to the reason for my visit, dispersing my abrupt magic out into the night with a flick of my wrist. The ground remained warm, but no longer smoldering. Word around town says you deal in antiquities. Is this true? The Minotaur hesitated, glancing at the ground in relief.
Says whom?
I glanced behind me as I heard the distant sound of sirens on a nearby road. Impossible. They couldn't be following me. Perhaps some kid had been caught speeding on the back roads. I was just being paranoid.
Says who? I corrected, turning back.
Irrelevant,
he muttered.
That rankled me. It is not irrelevant. It's paramount. The rules of grammar are just as important as the rules of engagement in war. Without them, we are barbarians, I argued.
The Minotaur frowned pensively.
Then I must take that into consideration.
So, are the rumors true or not? I pressed.
Possibly. What do you seek?
A book.
I know many books. Perhaps you could elaborate.
He replied, sounding bored. I weighed my options. My client wanted this badly, very badly, and so far I had turned up nothing. This was the end of the road. The sirens were closer now, and the flashing red and blue lights lined the fringes of the field. Fuck! It couldn't be for me. I rushed onward, anxious now.
I don't know the title, but I can show you the symbol from the cover. I had to move fast in case the cops really had found me. Regardless, if they drove by, chances were that they would either recognize my car or at least wonder why such a beautiful vehicle was parked outside a field on a deserted country road. The Minotaur knelt down to the ground, waiting. I noticed that his necklace was really a set of prayer beads and shook my head in disbelief. The Minotaur, a reformed Buddhist. I traced my fingers just above the grass, releasing a tendril of fire, like a pencil to burn an insignia into the now dry earth. It resembled a winged serpent over a flickering sun that appeared to be burning out or fading. The Minotaur was still for several breaths, and then glanced warily toward the sky. After a long silence, he unfolded from his crouch, scuffed up the ground with his massive boot, and whispered one word.
Dragons.
His horns gleamed wickedly in the moonlight as he towered over me. I blinked.
What the hell? Dragons?
I glanced back behind me as the sound of slamming car doors interrupted my train of thought and realized that the flashing lights were just outside the field, right by my parked car.
Shit. I had been made.
Time to wrap things up. As I stood, I saw a flicker of silver in the air. I reflexively caught what Asterion had tossed to me and found a dull chipped silver coin in my palm. A worn image of a man holding the legendary Caduceus, the healing staff of doctors everywhere, was imprinted on one side, but the other bore only a pair of winged feet.
Flip once to save the life of another, and once to save your own,
the Minotaur recited. I frowned. Why give me this?
I do as commanded. The book you seek is dangerous. I was told to pass this relic on to the first requester.
He fingered the prayer beads thoughtfully, glancing once over my shoulder at the flashing lights. How long have you held this? He answered a different question instead.
I have guarded the original version of the book you seek since I was put in that cursed labyrinth, but I fear that copies might exist in the outside world, if they haven't been destroyed over the years. Humans are always destroying their culture.
He snorted, eyes briefly flaring in outrage.
Both the coin and book were entrusted to me by Hermes.
My mouth might or might not have dropped open in disbelief for a moment, but the Minotaur continued.
If your desire for this book is strong enough, meet me here 2 days hence. We will duel at sunset.
But you're a Buddhist now. Couldn't you, you know, just sell it to me? The Minotaur shook his head with a hungry grin.
Promises made. Promises kept.
I glanced at the ancient coin in my palm.
Oh, and temple.
I looked up to see his boot flying at my midsection, so I hastily threw up a last-second shield of air. It deflected only the fatal portion of the blow.
Karma says hello. Don't ever cow-tip me again.
The force felt like, well, what I imagined a heel kick from the Minotaur would feel like. Then I was flying toward the pulsing lights. The Minotaur's guttural laughter stayed with me as I tumbled through the starry night. And then I landed chest first in a moist pile of cow shit, sliding a few feet so that it smeared a perfect streak from chest to groin. I heard a surprised grunt, and then a knee ground me into the cold grass, mashing the molecular particles of shit firmly between each individual fiber of my $600 coat. Cold steel clamped around my wrists.
I got him, Captain! He came out of nowhere!
I couldn't help it. I began to laugh, hard, despite the lingering pain of Asterion's well-placed farewell boot.
Fucking karma,
I bellowed between giggles.
I think he's hopped up on something, sir. Probably mushrooms, judging from all this cow shit.
Whatever.
A new voice, presumably the captain, said,
Let's just take him downtown. We have a few questions for him about his parents' murder.
I choked on my laughter. Chapter 3. The heavy steel door clicked open as a second cop entered the room. I had time to notice a third young cop standing guard outside, nervously fingering his holster, before the door closed. The interrogation room smelled like cleaning solution and metal. I, on the other hand, sat with my hands cuffed behind my back, wrist slightly chafed, smelling like cow shit,
like a stain on the great cog that is the shining white bureaucracy of the United States government. I was rightly furious, and my car was parked out in the middle of nowhere. I'd have to get Gunner or someone to drive me out there to pick it up later. The cop already at the table watched me with an amused grin, as he had for the past 20 minutes. He was obese, his belly sagging over his weapons belt. His cheeks hung heavy on his face, reminding me of a melting candle, and his buzzed haircut made him look all the more ridiculous. He hadn't shaved, and looked like the kind of guy who needed to shave twice a day in order to look presentable. I wanted to slap the smile off his face. "Now that we're all here, Detective Kosugi," I growled. "The cause of death, as your officers inform me, was inconclusive. Are you reneging on that statement?" Silver streaks started at the man's temples to merge with his wavy black hair, and he was comically short, scrawny even, but he somehow still managed to compose an aura of authority. A modern Napoleon. He hesitated at my knowledge of his name, but then glanced down at his badge and simply nodded. Then he proceeded to sit down, setting a styrofoam cup of a burnt tar coffee onto the table beside a manila folder. It was a few hours until midnight, and my palate was not that of a refined Starbucks barista. Coffee was coffee. I eyed it longingly.
"Mr. Temple," he began, in a nasally voice.
"Master Temple," I corrected him with an icy tone of warning. The patriarch of her family had always been referred to as the Master Temple, as far back as anyone could remember. In today's society, it sounded out of place, but it was a formality I was insistent upon pressing here. And the media ate it up since it sold headlines. So everyone knew of it. He nodded.
"Of course. Master Temple."
There was no mockery in his whiny voice. Just emphasis. As if he appreciated the concept of respect.
"First things first."
His badge glittered in the fluorescent lighting.
"Trespassing is illegal. You managed to pass a sobriety test ruling out mushrooms. So what were you really doing out there? Could our city's youngest billionaire really find nothing else to amuse him?"
He looked genuinely puzzled, glancing pointedly at the putrid stain on my chest.
"We could hold you for 24 hours, Master Temple. After all, I'm sure Mr.—"
He shuffled some papers from his file.
"Kingston would not be pleased with your uninvited exploration of his property."
"Are these really necessary?" I jangled my hands behind my back. Detective Kosugi's eyes squinted thoughtfully before nodding.
"For now, yes."
I scowled into his eyes, waiting a full 10 seconds to see if he would change his mind. He didn't blink. I decided right then that I was going to have some fun with my situation. Regulars, as we named non-magical beings, were terrified of the concept of magic being real, especially since the media had recently started fueling the fires with stories of magic happening all over America. The debate was on everyone's lips. Was it real? Was it a hoax? Regardless, most regulars were unable to comprehend the possibilities of things they didn't personally understand, and it was so much fun to capitalize on that anxiety. It was who I was. My charm. "All right, boys. Have it your way." I lifted my hands above my head in a languorous stretch, my wrists already free of the cuffs, as they had been for the last 19 minutes. I set the cuffs on the table, sliding them over to the other cop, Detective Allison. "Here you go, Allie." I tried to mimic the smile he had given me earlier, waggling a small bobby pin between my fingers. "It's amazing what one can learn on the web. Now, I'm not sure how you were raised, but it is considered the height of impropriety to have a conversation without offering refreshment to your guest, especially when the host has one. Unforgivably rude, actually." They blinked back at me in unison, shock apparent on their faces, as the cuffs sat on the table like a pink elephant in the room. As if on cue, the door opened, and the nervous cop entered with a steaming cup of coffee. He set it in front of me, and then nervously backed away from the room. I deduced that we were being recorded since my two jailers hadn't moved or spoken since my display. I had an audience. My smile stretched wider. Even better. Steam curled up from my cup. I invisibly casted a bit of magic into the coffee, dropping the temperature enough for me to down it in one gulp, which I promptly did. Again, both the cop's eyebrows raised in unison, amazed that the drink hadn't scalded my throat. I let them wonder at that. "Much better, gentlemen. Now, what do you two want to chat about next? Your future careers?"
Politicians and the media can be bought, and I have a few extra bucks to grease some palms. Elections are coming up. I waited. The detective stared from my hands to the cuffs again, in disbelief. Detective Allison responded first, rising from his chair with a furious growl, but Kosugi slapped a dainty palm on his forearm, the authority plain.
Let's continue this discussion professionally.
He glanced back to the folder. As Allison glared hatred at me for a moment longer, he finally sat down, the chair protesting his bulk with a loud squeak. I arched an eyebrow at the noise, my thoughts plain. His eyes hardened, but he leaned back as Kosugi read from a paper.
Let's talk about Temple Industries for a moment.
Temple Industries, the technology company my parents had started 20 years ago, headquartered in the thriving metropolis of St. Louis, Missouri. The company's fingers stretched wide, claiming over 3,000 patents, more than Microsoft, that range from software to computer chips and even to defense technology for the U.S. military. No one truly knew everything that the company concerned themselves with, just that they always seemed to produce the most cutting-edge technology. The company was vast, falling into the reputable Fortune 500, but I wanted nothing to do with it. It might be a very, very brief moment, as I have nothing to do with my parents' company. Other than owning a hefty amount of shares, I added honestly. Kosugi stared back, eyes sharp. I kept my face blank.
Yes, well, the interim president of the company, Ashley Belmont, is less than forthcoming about details of ownership. You're saying that you have no intentions of taking over the company.
Why would I? I answered questions with questions when pissy. Detective Ali leaned forward.
Money?
He growled hungrily. I glanced from face to face before leaning back in the steel torture device that doubled as a chair. I assume that being clever and thorough policeman, you have already combed over my finances. Kosugi waited a moment, and then gave a brief nod. Then you have no doubt noticed that I am already fairly wealthy from previous investments not limited to my shares in Temple Industries. Another nod. Furthermore, that I run my own arcane little bookstore which brings me a sufficient amount of annual income.
Plato's Cave,
Kosugi answered with a wry grin at my financial modesty. I nodded proudly. Have you also noticed that the stock in Temple Industries has dropped significantly since my parents' untimely death? The last word was hard for me to voice. Kosugi blinked, reaching down for the coffee to cover his towel. Perhaps my previous assumption was too flattering. Not as thorough as you should have been. I have made no move to assume leadership of their company, and the value of that company has only dropped since the unfortunate death of the owners. I dramatically dimmed the lights with magic as I stood from my chair. Kosugi's chair slid back as he hurriedly set the coffee back down to the table, glancing up at the lights with a frown. Regulars. They were still scared of the dark, refusing to believe that magic existed, even when it happened right in front of their faces. They didn't know whom they were toying with. No one knew I was a wizard. They probably just thought the lighting system was faulty, but it had the desired effect. You better not be implying that I had anything to do with their deaths, I hissed. As I allowed the lights to brighten back to normal, Kosugi swiveled his nervous brown eyes gaze back to me, no doubt wondering if he'd imagine the lights dimming.
Of course not. Please sit, Master Temple.
I didn't. He shrugged, regaining his composure, but Detective Allison remained on edge. Steel scraped the concrete floor as he scooted back to the table.
As I was saying, Miss Belmont says she will not speak to us until she has a chance to speak with you, but you do not answer her calls. Then we get a pack of lawyers on our backs for questioning her. You can see our predicament. Things would be easier if we could simply talk to her, but why would she need to speak to you first unless you are indeed planning on taking over the company?
He was whining again. I had no idea why she would want to talk to me, but I had been screening my calls lately. They were coming in from all over. CNN, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and every news channel within 100 miles had somehow found my personal cell phone number. I shrugged in answer.
Are you arresting me? There is no need for such words. We're merely trying to get to the bottom of this. We share the same goals, Master Temple, finding the cause of their death.
He hesitated on the last word, but it was obvious that he had intended to say murder.
If you could please sit and answer a few more questions, we can get this over with in short order.
The Minotaur's words came back to mind. The St. Louis Police Department had been the ones to tell me that the evidence of their deaths was inconclusive. They had been found dead in one of their laboratories with no signs of struggle, drugs, poison, or any of the usual clues that whispered murder. They had simply died within moments of each other. My father had been found with a minor but precise, almost surgical, paramortem gash on his wrist, but not deep enough to be fatal, and no blade in sight. The detectives had even declared it as self-inflicted around the time of death. Temple Industries had been their life, and ultimately, their death. I felt the barriers of my will weakening, the brick wall of restraint crumbling against the tides of power and magic inside me. "I do not have the answers you seek, gentlemen." I dramatically flicked a finger, as if to shake off a drop of water, and a blast of frigid air beckoned to my command. The sole door to the room flew inward, as if hit by a battering ram from the hall, the lock skittering across the floor to rest at my feet, and the temperature in the room dropped significantly. Detective Kosugi's cup of coffee tipped over, splashing the steaming liquid towards his face. I snapped my finger as the door rebounded off the inside wall, revealing the startled guard outside, now gripping the pistol at his belt in shaky fingers, the button latch safety rattling in the sudden wind. The steaming mass of coffee froze into a chunk of brown ice an inch away from Detective Kosugi's bloodless nose. Several frozen coffee cube drops fell into his lap. His chair slid back as his reflexes finally kicked in. Both of their eyes were wide now as they flinched from the door to me, panicked. I walked around him and Detective Allison on my way back to the door. "I'll talk to Miss Belbon for you. Next time, don't bother with the cuffs. Just say pretty please."
"What the fuck?"
Detective Allison roared in shock.
"How did he..."
His face was pale with fear.
"Was that..."
He glanced from face to face, and then to the camera in the corner of the room, his eyes wide.
"Magic?"
He whispered low enough for only our ears. I smiled, dimming the lights more dramatically this time, as I leaned closer, whispering back, conspiratorially, "Come now, officers. Don't tell me you still believe in fairy tales." My grin stretched further, menacing, and they each leaned away. "Answers can be dangerous. All men should strive to learn before they die what they are running from and to and why." I quoted, "Seems like you have faulty lighting here," I added. Then I strode out of the room, leaving the words hanging like an axe over their throats. I had a client to meet, then a well-deserved drink with some friends. I wasn't about to waste my time babysitting the city's men in blue. Chapter 4. I leaned against the cold brick wall of the diner, glancing at the sign hanging above my bookstore across the street through the light flurry of snow falling down to the ground in fat, heavy flakes. Plato's Cave was artfully painted onto the aged wood. I contemplated the events of the night as I waited for my client to arrive, trying to keep the wind at my back in order to avoid the sickly aroma of shit still painting my upper body. The cops now thought my parents had been murdered. A week had passed me by since hearing the dire news. No prior health issues could have caused it. Age had been the predominant concrete answer. But now I wasn't so sure. First the Minotaur, and now the cops. I wonder what had made them change their minds. Means, motive, and opportunity were the three things cops looked for in murder cases, as my childhood friend, now an FBI agent, Gunnar Randolph, had told me. The news of their death had wrecked me, but as an old Japanese friend from college had taught me long ago, grieve fiercely for one day and then move on. His ancestors had been samurai, a hard-ass culture. So that's what I did. The first day had been a mess, sticking to my store, needlessly stocking shelves and staying busy without thinking. The next day, I had sealed the coffin on those emotions, following the evidence clinically, detached after my allotted one day of grief. Then my present client had called on me, giving me something new to focus on. I had devoted myself to his request, ultimately leading to tonight's meeting with the Minotaur. From time to time, I obtained rare books for as was most often the case, less than reputable clients with large bank accounts. I had a reputation for being able to find goods where others couldn't, and it had landed me a decent income. I had clung to my new client's request like a bloodhound, anything to ignore the pain inside me. But now the grief was threatening to come back as I discovered that the cops apparently hadn't closed the high-profile case. It wasn't their fault that their prime suspect was a rich heir. How many times had I seen a similar case go through the media and prove correct? It made sense, but it was wrong and infuriating. If I had learned of even one shred of evidence proving murder, I would have most likely gone vigilante, Batman style. I hadn't been that close to my parents the last few years, but that was mainly out of stubbornness. As encouraged, I had double majored in physics and philosophy at the age of 20, but I had encountered an enchanting mistress while at college. Books. More accurately, the classics. Milton, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Dostoevsky, Dante Alighieri, and a vast slew of philosophers. Not wanting to stand in my parents' shadow, I had started my own business, something more in line with both my talents and my interests. Plato's Cave, my own Atlantis. And I had been damn successful against the modern world of digital formatting, Kindles, iPads, and Nooks. It seemed that ancient books and classic volumes only increased in worth, and I had contacts that the rest of the world didn't. Legends. Many people think of myth and folklore as either the very first fictional writings or the incessant ramblings of inebriated authors. Nothing more. But my family and I knew better. We were wizards, and being such, were deeply entwined with those mythical races. For better or worse, the myths were all very, very real. Hermes, the Minotaur, Hercules, wizards, and just as I had just been informed, dragons. The trouble was finding them. They didn't want to be found. They had lived their glory days long ago, and for the most part, remained reclusive. But sometimes they decided to socialize again, causing the occasional sighting or other unexplainable carnage. And that was usually where wizards came in. We were the unofficial police of the magical community, or at least the wizards I had met seemed to lean in that direction. But I had ways of finding those recluses, and a significant amount of charm that helped me win them over to help me find those old, withered, and forgotten tomes. Like I had with the Minotaur. Thinking of that encounter, I couldn't help but wonder why the hint of dragons had set him so on edge. I was pretty sure I would know if dragons were in my city. Big, scaly, hungry, flying lizards, stealing gold and virgins. Didn't ring any bells. I briefly wondered why the Minotaur had been prepared for my request thousands of years prior, and what Hermes had to do with it all. I idly fingered the coin in my pocket. Old books were like that, most often entrusted to an individual for life, and then passed down to a loved one upon their death. On the upside, the original might be able to fetch more money from my client, if I could prove it was authentic. It wasn't like I could tell him, "Well, the Minotaur told me it was a real deal, and he just wouldn't lie about something like that. He's a Buddhist now. They frown on lying." Impatient for my unpunctual client, I thumped open my pack of cigarettes, placed one between my lips, glanced around to make sure I was alone, and lit the tip of the cigarette with only a thought. No fancy hand motions, words, or lengthy process used at all. It had taken a while to hone my focus enough not to light my face on fire. The first few times hadn't been as successful. My magic was an ever-present companion of mine. I had been told that I was more powerful than most. Things that were quite difficult for other wizards came easily to me. I saw the world through tinted glasses. A whole world of colors, vibrations, waves, and particles danced around me, and I knew how to tap into them. Manipulate them to my desire with a thought. It was simply a part of me. I couldn't imagine it any other way, but I definitely knew I was a minority. Content, I nestled my shoulders against the cold wall, bent my knee to rest my boot against the brick in an impromptu lean, and took a sweet, heavenly inhale. Simply marvelous. For those of you lesser beings that haven't partaken of this man-made mana, you are missing out. I inhaled the menthol smoke, thinking of a favorite quote I had read long ago. Man, controlling Prometheus' gift of fire between two fingers. Relishing the cool smoke searing my lungs, I was startled by a sudden voice from the alley beside me.
Those things are bad for you. Cancerous, even.
Recognizing the voice, my pulse slowly returned to normal as I turned to face my client. People were rarely able to sneak up on me.
My body's a temple, and every good temple needs some incense now and again. Something you should learn. Like punctuality, kid.
My client grunted as he stepped out into view, lighting his own clove cigarette by the smell of it. The fragrance surrounded us like a soothing blanket as he puffed it to life.
The brightest candle burns half as long, right?
He exhaled another cloud of the pleasant-smelling smoke from his nostrils. He somehow made it look dangerous, like a bouncer flexing his muscles or a cop cocking his pistol.
Hypocrite,
I muttered. He smiled.
You smell bad,
he finally concluded. I shit myself earlier. Deal with it. He frowned.
Does that happen often?
I glared back, and he chuckled before shrugging it off.
Did you find it?
I studied my client, trying to figure him out. Dark, lanky hair hugged his scalp down to his jaw, and his eyes were dark enough for me to have never placed a color to them. I peered closer, but seeming to sense my curiosity, he glanced away. His harsh, angular jaw and cheekbones made stark shadows in the dim light. Tight leather pants clung to his legs, and calf-high boots that looked like they belonged on a Pirates of the Caribbean set covered his feet. The leather smelled clean and sharp. His white V-neck tee contrasted the tight pants, and a thick silver chain hung against his chest, peeking out from underneath the fabric. He looked like a modern James Dean. He wasn't even wearing a coat, and it was snowing. Rebel without a cause, all right. I suppose many would have found him roguishly handsome, and I, being comfortable with my masculinity, realized this with a slight twinge of jealousy. Possibly. I'll know for sure in 2 days. I noticed a new smell for the first time around my client. Cold rocks. And snakes. I know that neither of those things instill a familiar sense of smell to most people, but being a wizard, my senses were enhanced, and I could place associations as such things. I stored it away for later thought. The boy, because he was younger than me, nodded.
2 days. That's perfect.
Unsure what that implied, I probed a bit.
Are you sure you want it?
My contact seems to think it might be dangerous. I paused the required amount of time. Which raises the price. He flashed me an amused smirk, took another inhale of a cigarette, and then dismissively flicked away the ash.
Price is not an issue.
He leveled his dark black diamond eyes on me. The irises were black. No color whatsoever.
It is vital that you get it. And no later than 2 days. Sooner is better, but definitely not any later.
He glanced around warily, even up at the nearby buildings. Paranoid much?
Any other inquirers?
That stumped me.
No, why? I asked.
I'm just curious. I presume that this still remains a secret between us.
I nodded.
I have your word on that?
He pressed. I knew that there was more to this than he was letting on, and that he was definitely not your average Joe. He was wary, but unafraid, anticipatory. I repressed a shudder at exactly who my client might be. Everyone had his or her secrets. I've already told you that you have my word, but it's just a book. Why the secrecy? The word sounded hollow even to me. Books were not merely books, at least, not always. I've cracked a deadly spine once or twice in my day. Like Twilight. Now that was deadly. The series had managed to turn normal adolescent girls into raving, hormone-filled psychopaths intent on dating vampires, and no one would ever knowingly do something that stupid. He ignored my question.
Good. It's nice to know that some still honor their word.
He rubbed his shoulders, signaling the end of business.
So, I'll meet you 2 nights from now. Where is our next cloak and dagger rendezvous?
He grinned.
I recommend somewhere not so near to your place of business, wizard.
He hadn't known that appellation last time, or at least hadn't revealed it. I told him a place off the top of my head, and he began laughing.
Interesting venue. Ever been there?
I shook my head, and he laughed even harder.
Okay.
I don't even know your name, I said, ignoring whatever he found so funny. His nose crinkled as he scanned the street, muscles tensing slightly.
It's better that way. My name is on too many lips already. It seems I have many.
He glanced around again, muscles growing tighter.
Bands. See you in 2 days, Temple.
Then he stepped back into the alley and disappeared. Even to my senses, he was simply gone.
Whatever,
I muttered to the empty alley. I turned away, taking another puff from my cigarette, and my phone vibrated in my pocket. I glanced down, read the text, and then glanced across the street to my store. I saw my two friends, Gunnar and Peter, leaning against the door staring at me. They were waiting for our monthly nightcap, as we had done for the last 5 years in order to maintain our friendship amidst diversifying careers and, well, just life in general getting in the way. I stepped away from the wall and waved as I headed their way, eager for that drink. Chapter 5. Gunnar glanced behind me, towards the alley as I approached.
Nate.
I took another drag of the cigarette and then stomped it out under a heel. Gunnar Randolph was built like a house, tall, strong, and skin as pale as fine alabaster. His face was hard, with a double cleft chin, and a rough but neat blonde beard covered his lower face. Blonde hair brushed his jaws, looking expensively well kept. He had been forced to use some bogus religious excuse so that the FBI wouldn't make him cut it short. Gunnar Randolph was descended from the Norse Vikings, his last name meaning Shield Wolf, and he left a trail of broken hearts wherever he walked. But despite all the attention his looks gained him from the fairer sex, he seemed immune to the casual chase, instead searching for that one true love. It was like trying to find the perfect steak without ever eating meat before. He was the worst wingman ever. Peter, on the other hand, was a study in contrast. Handsome, but unremarkable. Tall and wiry, with bright blue eyes, he looked like every other yuppie in town. They each wore slacks and a shirt, not having changed from their respective jobs before heading over to my digs. I had known them both since childhood, and we had been friends ever since. Peter, being a regular with no unique powers, was definitely the oddball out, but it hadn't affected our friendship at all.
Who were you talking to?
Gunnar's face was curious, glancing into the alley.
Whom? Fucking whom?
Is everyone illiterate? I grouched. Peter chuckled. We were alone on the street.
I sensed him. Sensing me. Then he was gone. And he smells like shit,
Gunnar said. Sorry, but the smell is all me. I had an accident. Gunnar's baby blue eyes weighed me, but ignored my hygiene.
What was he?
If Gunnar couldn't even place what the kid was, then I had no idea. I shrugged.
A client? That's all I know.
And they pay my bills. Sort of a don't ask, don't tell policy. You two ready for our roundtable? Peter and Gunnar both nodded, but not before both peering over my shoulder again. Peter looked curious, but Gunnar didn't seem satisfied with my response.
Of course we're ready. It's our 5th anniversary, after all.
Oh, darling, you remembered, I mocked. Gunnar rolled his eyes. I unlocked the heavy oak front door, closing my eyes for a moment as I turned off my secondary alarm system. A fine mist of magic was laced over the entire perimeter of the building. My friends, knowing the routine, waited patiently, although Peter studied me curiously, no doubt trying to see something of my magic. Peter had experienced its effects once and wasn't anxious to see it happen again. The feeling of 1,000 fire ants swarming your body left an impression, and very real bites. One reason for the secondary protection was the valuable and unique items stored inside, but the other was because I lived in the loft overlooking the front lobby, and what a lobby it was. I had purchased the antique 1920s theater and performed a few minor renovations. redesigning the grand lobby into a bookstore with a more modern feel. Several steps led down into the store from the entryway. 6-foot-high walled glass dividers were randomly scattered about, effectively sectioning the room into a maze of couches, bookshelves, and even a European coffee bar tucked back against the wall. The convoluted maze was an extensive web of feng shui that a team of monks had helped me design. Modern, yet classic, yin and yang. Vintage movie posters, steampunk paraphernalia, and vinyl records decorated the rough brick walls. It was the ultimate man cave. Even though the place was empty at this time of night, it still felt homey and welcoming. The glass wall dividers were covered with wax-penciled graffiti in a variety of different colors. Quotes, ancient passages from classic works, names, and brief artwork, a rite of passage granted to my frequent customers. I led the way to the back stairs that climbed the old brick wall to my loft. Two of the three theaters nestled in the back had also been revamped. One was packed with almost every type of gaming system. I'd even acquired a team of beta testers to try out games in the developmental stages. Hence, installing the coffee shop in the lobby. Nerds needed caffeine to function. And my business was the Atlantis for nerds across the land. Nerdlantis. The second theater was now a vast library where I conducted my more profitable sales with those premier clients of mine. The third theater was on a need-to-know basis, and not many needed to know. My glass window loft overlooked the entire store, both front and back, as I had gutted the old projector room to create a home within a home for myself. A sanctum sanctorum. The stairs creaked as we ascended my modern castle tower, reminding me of the captain's prow of a ship, overseeing the activity of the crew below. I shouldered the heavy oak door open and headed back to the bar against the far wall. Settling down into a pair of couches inside the large open loft, my friends took off their coats, relaxing as I began to work. I discarded my own ruined coat, tossing it into a nearby laundry basket with optimistic hope that it could be salvaged. I placed three cups before me. Absinthe was the chosen poison for this auspicious evening. The licorice-fired spirit had been the favored drink of visionaries throughout history, including Oscar Wilde, Vincent van Gogh, and Ernest Hemingway. But I wasn't about to attempt Hemingway's famous death-in-the-afternoon cocktail of chilled champagne and absinthe. I chose the French method instead. I bent to my task. The process of making the perfect drink now, a familiar routine for me, as I listened to Gunnar and Peter's soft conversation. Salivating with anticipation as the thick aroma began to fill my nose, I placed several ice cubes into the drinks, set my creations atop a silver tray, and then carried them over to the table in the sitting area. I handed Gunnar and Peter each a glass, bowed my head, and then backed away into my own aged Darlington Chesterfield couch. I snatched up the last glass and reclined with a pleased sigh. "So, what's new with you two?" I asked curiously. Gunnar answered first, clearly excited.
"I was given authority to put together my own field team. Special agent in charge, Roger Reinhardt, is letting me dance the gray area a bit with some of my recent cases since the traditional protocol hasn't been very successful. My unique talents will be a benefit. Jurisdiction and red tape hold us back all too often, so he's turning a blind eye, as long as I produce results." He winked. "Off the record, of course."
I grinned. This was huge. "That's fantastic. You're implying that more of the recent crimes have been in our field of expertise, involving magic?"
Gunnar merely nodded, but his lips tightened a bit, apparently closed on any further elaboration of the subject. Perhaps Peter wasn't supposed to hear details. He shrugged.
"It will most likely fizzle to nothing, but it was good to hear that some people are wise to the fact that they are helpless to solving some of the newer crimes. It's only in the preliminary stages right now, though. A temporary trial-and-error experiment."
Peter, sensing Gunnar clamming up, chimed in.
"I've gained a bit of respect around the investment firm. They're letting me work directly with a new client, a new family in town with deep, deep pockets."
To himself, he murmured something lower that I couldn't quite catch, thumbing a worn leather bracelet I had never seen before on his wrist. Odd. Peter had never worn any accessories. Was he in danger of becoming metrosexual? Something was different about him, now that I thought about it. But I remained silent,
not sensing anything specific. It might even be my big break. Then I propose a toast. I raise my glass. To women and careers, and the men who ride them. They grinned, and we each took a deep drink. This was what our round table was for, setting aside a single night to speak of how we were attempting to impact the world. After years of hard work, it seemed my two best friends were doing just that. Gunnar opened his mouth to speak, but I interrupted him. You almost got me killed tonight with your stupid text message. He frowned before answering.
Speaking of that, was that some weird autocorrect mistake in your response? It said you were in a cow pasture.
No, that was what I typed. I sipped my drink and sighed in appreciation as my taste buds were overloaded with fennel and anise. Okay, that's not mysterious at all. Peter's eyes twinkled as he leaned forward. Gunnar was still frowning.
So, barring creepy clients and cow pastures, how have you been?
Gunnar asked carefully. I grinned over the rim of my aromatic drink. Both of those negations are actually related. I just got busted from the police station. Apparently trespassing is frowned upon, as is cow tipping. Peter choked on his drink.
Pardon?
Gunnar wasn't so polite.
What? You know they are looking for any excuse to give you trouble. You even said that you noticed patrol cars hanging around the shop. And why on earth were you cow tipping? Could you find nothing else to entertain you on a Thursday night?
I needed information, I began, settling deeper into the chair. I spotted my first edition of Paradise Lost on the table beside me and recalled the last passage I had read before retiring the tome. Do they only stand by ignorance? Is that their happy state? The proof of their obedience and faith? It reminded me of the detectives at the police station. It had been close to a week since I had read the passage, but I had an eidetic memory, so it was forever burned into my brain. A gift and a curse. I had never quite gotten used to how others couldn't do the same thing.
How could you get information by cow tipping?
Gunnar pressed, knowing there was more to the story. We had fallen into a strong friendship almost from the very beginning, and then upon discovering our unique similarities, the strands of friendship had only grown stronger. We each had one foot in a whole other world. The world of magic. Gunnar was a werewolf, able to change at a whim now, thanks to my parents' help long ago. As if sensing this, Gunnar idly thumbed the tattoo on his wrist, a gift from my parents. Werewolves normally couldn't control their change from one form to the other, but the tattoo served as a totem, allowing Gunnar to shift at will, no longer a victim to the cycles of the moon. Merely a thought or a finger on the tattoo would begin the transformation. White snowy fur slowly began to curl up from Gunnar's forearm before he realized what he was doing. He removed his finger, closed his eyes, and the fur disappeared. He was a regular, just happening to fall into our lives back in school, and he had been there ever since. Despite having no powers, he was a good friend and an even better man. He was one of the few people who knew our secrets. Even Gunnar's boss didn't know the truth, but he did know that Gunnar had an unusually high success rate for solving cases that other agents had deemed unsolvable. The age of digital media had made the lives of our kind harder to conceal. YouTube had caught more magic on film than any number of cameras in the past. Even dismissed as hoaxes, a growing number of people throughout the world had begun to question this resurgence of magical evidence with some serious scrutiny. Luckily, they were mostly regarded as intoxicated conspiracy theorists. I couldn't imagine what would happen once the lid finally blew on that subject. It would be the Salem witch trials all over again. Blood would flow in the streets, and the government would no doubt pass a litany of regulations and laws within weeks. I shivered at the thought, coming back to the question. I needed to speak with the Minotaur. I answered simply, taking another sip of the licorice fire. Peter leaned even further forward.
The Minotaur? As in the one Theseus killed in Daedalus's labyrinth? He's real?
Come now, Peter. You know better. Of course he's real. Almost all the myths are real. But the Minotaur wasn't killed. True, he was defeated by Theseus, but he swore not to eat any more men, the first monster carnivore turned vegetarian. So, was allowed to survive. He's still kicking around, so to speak. And he's good at finding things. My kind of things. I still felt the impression of his